We have a full week of shows here on The Morning Show, and a good way to kick it off with our good friend Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator. Doing anything fun this summer, Lauren?
Oh, sure. I mean, everything's fun in the summer. It's a different speed, a different rhythm around that school district. I go there every morning like I'm supposed to, but it feels lighter, of course, because there's not as many kids around. But it's funny, Phil, you kind of get into the parking lot and we have summer school again at our elementary school, and the kids start to kind of want to be back a little bit in July. You see more bikes around the our campus, and you see more kids around town. And once they leave in June, it takes a couple weeks before they start driving their bikes or walking around our campus. But by July, kids want to know, who's my teacher next year? And people want to know what's going to happen in August and all those things. So yeah, it's lighter, but it's still fun. Absolutely fun. So yeah, just had some fun last week. I got to spend Friday afternoon and morning up at the Sauk County Fair. I get to be lucky because River Valley covers three counties, so I get to go to the Sauk County Fair, the Iowa County Fair, and the Richland County Fair. And Sauk County Fair on Friday, I was helping out in the dairy ring with Ms. Sherry Graffunder, who's our FFA advisor and our agriculture teacher, and just had a great time up there. All the Sauk County educators were there for agriculture, and it's always fun to see, you know, the kids in those summer activities, and I think the county fairs are a great way to see how kids out of school get to do many fun things that really round out their education as well. So it was really fun. Got to be a part of that dairy show. Got to go see some of the beef kids. Got to see some of the things in the small animal husbandry and things like that. So Sauk County Fair is a great fair. Looking forward to the Iowa County Fair. That'll also be around. And then the Richland County Fair. So all of those things are a fun way to kind of keep school moving in my head while we get to do the fun things out in the burbs, I guess I would say, out in the different parts of our district.
Also, behind the scenes, you have a new River Valley School Board member.
Yeah, we're excited to welcome to our team at the River Valley School District Board is Jenna Pode. And Jenna will be representing Lone Rock. Lone Rock is a great little town, one of our four towns. And within that, I just am excited for Jenna because she's a River Valley School District graduate. She's a mom of a couple of our students. She's got a Master's of Business Administration. So that's a great thing to have with a board member that understands that fiscal responsibility and all the things that it takes for that. And she also works at UW Health. So she kind of gets that large picture of commerce, but she also has that regional kind of focus, but she can bring it right down to the hometown and really think about it. And how would that apply to Lone Rock? So whenever we have any kind of opening on a school board, I guess I just want everybody out there to know that within an elected position, if halfway through that electorate time, it has a pause, or I have a school board member that needs to step away, there's an entire process for public notice of a vacancy that goes to board clerk, that goes to board president, that then we have to look for enough qualified elector to take over that geographic area. And so we did that, and we had our out there, and we had the candidates for vacancy send us letters of interest, and we just had one, and it was Ms. Jenna Pode, and she is overqualified to be on our board. She's an excellent addition, and we're just excited to have her aboard.
It seems like she just graduated high school, though. You know?
Isn't that funny?
Time
how
goes.
That happens? Yeah, it does happen, and we're excited to have her aboard. But it's always good to make sure that everybody in the community understands that they are represented. And River Valley is one of those districts that also has kind of zones of representation. There's rural Lone Rock, and then there's Lone Rock proper within the town of Lone Rock. And so that's true for all four of our communities. And so we have nine different, I guess I'll call them districts within our school district that then have to have someone from that space that sits on our school board to make sure that there's equal representation for the large area that we have.
Recently, Lauren, I know you did a presentation on rural poverty, or poverty in general in Wisconsin. What can you tell us about?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about summer is it allows us to take some time to step away and think about the challenges within our family. Some of it's geographic, some of it might be social, but a lot of it ends up coming down to kind of the monetary, I guess, background of a family and how that can really put some challenges on a kid. When we look at the research, we really can see that a kid that's not doing well in school often comes from a home that is really struggling in some way. And one of the ways that they can struggle is within poverty. So within Wisconsin, I guess I want you guys to hear that in 2024, because we always have to look at lag data, about 12% of the United States and about 10% of Wisconsin really sits in a non-cash benefit, or they have basically poverty. Poverty in the sense that their family needs extra help in order to survive. So one out of 10 kids coming to the district comes from a house that's really impoverished. And that's really hard for us sometimes to realize. The other thing that's really important about that is that child poverty and rural poverty is higher than usually what's happening in Wisconsin. So within Wisconsin, there's about that 10% of poverty. But when you look at rural poverty, it's slightly higher. And then when you look at kids impoverished, that's even higher when you look at those percentages. So that's something that's really interesting to kind of sit through. The other thing that I have to report is that within River Valley, then, when we look at poverty, the Department of Public Instruction has us look at free and reduced rates for lunch, and that's how we measure poverty in a school district. And in River Valley, we're at around 36% of our kids need free and reduced lunch. That's one in three kids comes from a home that doesn't meet that threshold of being able to afford lunch or and or breakfast. And that really does affect the kids. Now, that doesn't mean we change any expectations for that kid. That means that kid still has to behave and learn and lead and be the best kid that they can be. But it is important for us to realize that those kids have extra challenges. I can also think, and I can hear people in the back of my head say, well, if those parents would just get to work, just get a job. Come on, don't sit there and kind of hang out and wait for the government to give those handouts. I need you to hear also that statistically in River Valley, 92% of our parents are working. So if 35% of them are in free and reduced, but 92% of them are in the labor force, that tells you that there's really people giving it a good try and they still just can't afford the prices that are out there today. Right. Mm-hmm. And that could go for mortgages, that could go for food, that could go for cell service, that could go for a lot of different things. So I just want people to know that, you know, throughout summer when we look at these things, it makes me as a district administrator think about what supports can I put out there in the community to make sure that those kids feel like they fit in. And so within the giving communities that we have, I just did a presentation on what are the ways that you can really help out a River Valley kid. And so within our community, there are lots of things that we do, and we have very giving communities. Whether you're in Ithaca, Richland Center, whether you're up in Weston, or whether you're over in Arena, Lone Rock, Plain, or Spring Green, there are people in your community that are pushing forward, that are trying to help out the kids. In River Valley proper, we kind of have a handout that we've really focused our families into. If they want to give to our district, there's six different ways they can do so. So right now, we have a school supply drive open, and there are big buckets in several businesses around the area, and those buckets basically are for school supplies so that kids and teachers can get the things they need in case a kid comes in without any of those things. The other thing that we often have is we have a weekend backpack program. We have monetary donations that have us then buy bulk food, which we then place in the kids' lockers as soon as kids are back at school. And that food goes home with those kids so that there is food in that house over the weekend. So very anonymously, we'll go to that kid's locker and we'll place in groceries so that that kid can have something to eat. Because for some of these kids, like I said, that 35%, school lunch and school breakfast might be their two big meals of the day. And so this allows us to give those kids some additional, I guess, pieces or items of food for the weekend. We also have Project Lunchbox. So we have monetary donations come in where we can help kids with food insecurity. So again, if their account gets void or if their account gets really low and they can't afford food, then we can help them out with school lunch power. We have Empower Her. We have Project Hygiene. Those are two different things where we really look at personal care items, and that comes right before Thanksgiving. And then right around the Christmas time, we also have an entire process with our local police department to make sure that every kid can have gifts for Christmas. So I guess what I'm saying is just because we're not in school doesn't mean that we're not thinking of these kids. And those kids go home during the summer, and sometimes they don't have the great things that we offer them as a school district. So continue to think about those kids during summer. Continue to get those kids to the local services that are out there. We're so lucky to have like a St. Vinny's or to have all sorts of food banks around our areas that really help out these families in need. And I guess I don't want anybody ever to feel like that's a bad thing that they have to need it. But also, if you have the means, always feel free to donate, because we'll make sure that we get the right things to the right kids for the right reason.
We had some representatives from St. Vincent de Paul on our morning show last week, and so they've got a new building coming up. The food pantry in Spring Green has another.
Absolutely.
And it's called, right in the circle, not too far from the school, isn't
it? Yeah, we're really excited about that. So the Spring Green food pantry will be right there. They will serve any family that comes there. The St. Vincent de Paul, we will have a new building in Spring Green proper for people to make donations. That'll be opening somewhere, I believe, in October, right at the beginning of October. And yeah, it's right down the school, right down the road from the school district. So people will be able to access, you know, kind of the great things that you would need for a kid, you know, a good education, some good groceries, or some good clothing to really help the kid live their life without all those worries of insecurity as they move forward.
36% for free and reduced lunch, is there a possibility that could be higher than that? You know, because not everybody signs up, or not everybody admits it.
Of course, Phil. I mean, we are part of Wisconsin. Wisconsin is that Midwest nice, right? You're supposed to do what you're supposed to do and not complain about it. And I have a lot of families that will say, nope, we don't want to apply. But that makes me feel like there's so many more out there that could be reporting. So if that number's at 36%, a lot of districts believe if you're in the 30s, you're really in the 50%, that about half of the kids coming into your building have a need where their family of four, and I think the threshold's right around $40,000 for a family of four, that they're not making enough to really take care of everybody's needs in that house. So yeah, that number is definitely low because it's based on self-reporting.
Mm-hmm. You wanted to talk a little bit about WASBO.
Yes.
And could you fill us in on what that's about?
Yeah. So recently, there's a great article that was presented by WASBO. And WASBO is the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials. So there's a Principals Association, and there's a District Administrators Association, and there's a Business Officials Association in Wisconsin schools. And those are the folks that really look at the money for our districts and really think about what's going on in our districts. And recently, it was actually this last, I would say spring, the Wisconsin PTA, the Parent Teacher Association, filed a lawsuit against the state of Wisconsin. And that lawsuit is around the idea of whether or not Wisconsin is funding the schools based on what's in our Wisconsin state constitution. So our constitution in Wisconsin states that, in part, legislation shall provide by law for the establishment of district schools, which we have, we love. But within that, we shall, as nearly uniform as practicable, and such schools shall be free and without charge of tuition to all children for the ages of 4 to 20. And I think where WASBO is really pointing out a discrepancy is that line in there that speaks to as nearly uniform as practical. When a district as large as Middleton Cross Plains can have administrators beyond compare, and yet a small district like Ithaca can only have two, there's a real interesting kind of disparity there that the state of Wisconsin really needs to take a look at. And every time I come, I try to talk about how I love this job and I need to be here to fight for the kids of the rural districts. Part of that is to educate the folks in rural areas that the state constitution has said whatever tax dollars they receive, they need to give back to the districts in as uniform a manner as practicable. And I don't think that's happening. You know, the little districts are getting littler, and they are not funding them the same way that they are funding those big districts. And if they are, it's not going to do the work that they intended it to do in the Constitution. Again, we spend a lot of time talking about how property tax is where a lot of our funding comes from. And a lot of that property now is not owned by the people that live there. And there aren't as many students there. So for us to rely on property tax as our major contributor and to do it by a head count of the number of kids off that property is a very old way of thinking. And so I think what this lawsuit really does do is it pushes at the state to think about different options. And you, Phil, have looked at me multiple times and said, well, who's doing it better? How could we get better at this? Really, what this lawsuit does is it says, should the legislature fail to establish a new finance provision, it shall make them go together in a timely fashion and establish a schedule, a new way of adopting and implementing a new school finance system. And really what this lawsuit is doing is forcing the hand of legislators to really take a hard look at it and really think about maybe I'm just out of the box and I'm not thinking about the best ways that I can do it, but it's really forcing our legislators to get at the table, talk about the deep disparity that's happening between rural, suburban, and urban, and really finding a new way to figure that out.
Lots of times we have legislators on this program, and they'll always point to declining enrollment.
Yes.
Which is true. It's a fact. But you're asking even more of the schools in terms of special education and different things and technology upgrades and things like that. That's just not keeping pace, right?
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of mandated things that people don't realize that we have to do. I'm thinking to one of the most recent mandates that came through that said you need to really focus on early literacy. Great. We will. Happy to do so. And so they wanted a more consistent way to look at early literacy. And they said, well, you should be using these curricula. Okay, use these curricula. We can do that. So then we have to train our staff into the new that curricula. And then we have to buy that new curricula. And then we've got to make sure that we support that new curriculum. There's not a lot of money in the state to do all of those things. And so it puts the burden back onto the district for that new expense, I guess is the best way to say it. It talks about, you know, health provisions. It talks about how we have to teach certain things in a certain way. And again, those are all really good ideas. I'm not saying that they're asking us to do things that are unreasonable, but they're not funding it. They're just mandating it. And some of those things cost a lot of money for rural districts where we don't have 100 teachers teaching the same thing. So we've really got to implement things differently in rural districts that you don't have in suburban or urban districts. So it costs us a little bit more. And I don't think they always think of that. Great ideas, legislators. Thank you. I appreciate that. But where's the funding to make sure that it can happen? And so I think sometimes they have great ideas, but they don't always come up with a checkbook to make sure that it balances out.
A lot of people were hoping they were going to get back in session this summer, call the emergency session, but it hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't happened. And there was a lot of talk around increasing special education funding at the beginning of summer or late spring, and they had a bipartisan agreement on it. And when that got to session, they turned it down, which, again, there's got to be reasons of why they turned it down. I'm not judging their process. I am judging whether or not then are they having the next conversation? Are they thinking about what's coming up alternatively? And I think you'll hear from one side of the aisle, we've done our best. That was them over there. And on the other side of the aisle, they said, well, we did our best. And they point to the other side. And I just wish they'd all come to the table for a bipartisan conversation around school funding, because it's a big topic in every community throughout the state.
Yeah. And I've said before, they need to pick the brains of people that are out in the trenches. You know, I mean, honestly, bring you in, Steve Board from Richland Center.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because you guys would have some good ideas.
I think we would. And I think there's a lot of people throughout Wisconsin that could represent really creative ways to get better funding formula. And as I research it a little bit, there's so many more states that are trying to balance kind of not only property tax, but federal taxes, but sales taxes, but income taxes. And they kind of spread the wealth amongst those taxes rather than where in Wisconsin we kind of heavily utilize that property tax. And so I think they just got to look at different states. Other states are doing this better than we are. And I don't know why they're not willing just to go back to that kind of idea and kind of do some homework.
Right.
Get some research out there and really look at what states are doing it differently and see if it would fit the model of Wisconsin.
At what point do you look to the new school year? Is it happening now?
Oh, yeah.
So you got the past behind you. The race is on, right?
The race is on. And here comes Pride Through the Backstretch, right? Yeah. Great song, by the way. I give myself to my birthday, right? Like, my birthday is June 16th. I think, okay, the school year ended around June 6th. I give myself till about the 16th before I start thinking about, oh, I got to get ready for August. And so in June, I try to leave everybody alone, and we kind of have a very free-flowing schedule. But as soon as July comes, we're ready to go. So July brings around the ideas of those 4th of July parades, the marching bands hit the ground running, and off we go to try to get things ready for August. So my teachers will be returning to me. August 21st is when my newest teachers will come. So my brand new teachers and new staff orientation will happen August 21st, which means a month prior to that, I've got to make sure that everything's ready for the mailer to get it out there. So July 21st is about a week away. So I'm about a week away from all the mailings and everything that's got to get out there for my educators. And then thinking about our parents, we have to flip over our statistics in our school system. So we've got to make sure we get out of the 25-26 system and into the 26-27 system, which just blows my mind, the idea of 2027. But then we have staff training for 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. Got to make sure that I have everything ready for that. We get ready for that long weekend of Labor Day that comes up, and then kids come in on September 1. However, we all know that kids will be on our campus for athletics, for registrations, for open houses right away in August. So these next 2 weeks will be really busy, Phil. Yes, we're on the big push to get ready for everything. And then in River Valley, as we do it beyond compare, we get everything going in September and then head into that homecoming week. So our homecoming week, which is the 21st through the 25th, that has just all the highlights in there. And then on the 25th, we have our school fair. So that will be an incredible school fair again. And our whole homecoming kind of theme is once upon a homecoming. So kind of like Once Upon a Time or Once Upon a Mattress was a famous musical. It's kind of in that Disney-esque theme, I guess I would say, but it's very much about princesses and princes and castles and all the great things that go along with that kind of wonderful idea of once upon a homecoming. So we are plugging on and getting ready, I guess is the best thing, and we're excited for all the things that fall will bring.
As you talk about that theme, I'm picturing the boulevard leading into the school and how it's going to be decorated.
Yeah, that's a great tradition. So our fall activities, whether they're a sport or a different activity like FFA or all the different things, they will take over that boulevard. And so it will and be illuminated, right? It will be fully engulfed with all the decorations for each team and all the great things. And what River Valley does well is that school pride. They really believe in their school district. We really have that pride to do our very best. And so that just really kind of is shown during that homecoming week with our big parade, with the school fair, with the great night of football. But all that week, we have the great volleyball things. We've got great cross country events. There'll be all those different things that week. And so we just get ready for it. And we really think about celebrating everything good in River Valley as we try to push forward as being one of the best rural districts in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. What about hiring? You have all your positions filled then?
We are in the process right now of hiring a couple. I think we signed on a new special educator last Thursday night at the board meeting, and I'm in negotiations with a new business manager as we kind of push that forward, which will be on our administrative team. So we're trying. There's a couple positions open, and they can always come look at rvschools.org, but I think we're ready to go. We may have one teacher assistant position open, and we may have one food service for like a cook in one of the buildings open. But beyond that, we are ready to go.
Wonderful. And we appreciate you coming back. You're a monthly guest here on the program. And the next time you come back, you'll be knee deep in it, right?
I will be knee deep in it. And we're already, I would say, ankle deep. But I will be knee-deep in it, that's for sure, by the time you see me next.
Sounds good. Good to see you, Lauren.
Thanks, Phil.
You bet. Have a good rest of your summer there. Lauren Glassbrenner, River Valley District Administrator, joining us on this part of the morning show.